October the 13th, first morning lecture. And we have this morning a little further data on the difference between an objective and a subjective technique, and a little more data on step two. Now, in view of the fact that you're nice and sleepy, probably, or something of the sort, I want you to look down from wherever you may be, and see under the right foot of the body a number of planets. Down, see a number of planets on the right foot of the body. There. Now look up and find two corners of the room. Okay, let's look under that right foot again and find a number of planets. Now let's look up again and find the two corners of the room. Feel them. Look down under that right foot again, find a number of planets. Now let's look up and find the two corners of the room. Foot there, let's find these planets. Let's look up and find the two corners of the room. Let's look under the left foot and find a number of planets. The left foot and find a number of planets. Now let's look up and outside the messed universe. Okay, let's look under the left foot again. Find some planets. Now let's look up and outside the messed universe once more. And now let's look at the Capitol Dome in Washington and the Washington Monument. Let's look under the left foot and find some plants. Now look outside the mess you notice. Now let's look through Eisenhower's eyes. Let's look through Lana Turner's eyes. Let's look under the left foot and find some plants. And outside the messed universe, and the Washington Monument, and the Capitol Dome. And your left shoulder, and the Washington Monument, and the Capitol Dome. And your left shoulder, and the Washington Monument, and the Capitol Dome. And your right knee, Washington Monument, the Capitol Dome. And the bottom of your lungs, and the Washington Monument, the Capitol Dome. On the front of your nose, and the Washington Monument, the Capitol Dome. And your right eardrum, the Empire State Building and the Tower of London. And your left ear. And the center of your stomach. And your right eardrum. And the end of your nose. And the two extremities of the Great Wall of China. And the bottom of your lungs, and the sun and the moon. And under both feet, you find the sun. And under both feet, and find the Empire State Building. And under both feet, find St. Paul's of London. And under both feet, and find the moon. And under both feet, and find your skull. stars get Earth and the sun. Where you happen to be at the moment, get a whole mob of people in front of you trying to understand. Turn that around to make a whole mob of you trying to understand. And throw that away and put a whole mob of you trying to understand. Face that about a whole bunch of other people trying to understand. Throw that away and get a whole mob of people being uncertain. And turn that around on you as uncertain. And a whole mob of seeing eye dogs trying to see. And turn them around as the answer trying to see. Turn them around again as the question trying to see. I get them barking. I get them barking their ABCs. Now blow them all up. Put out your father's head and blow it up. Now put it out 2 miles and blow it up. Put it out 10 miles and blow it up. Put it out 40 miles and blow it up. I get a vast multitude under you admiring you for having done this to your father. Now throw those away and put your mother's head out in front of you and go on. Put it out there about 200 yards and blow it up. Put it out there again about 2 miles and blow it up. I'll put it out 2 light years and blow it up. Put her out there again and blow her up. Now throw all that away. And under your 2 feet, find the sun. And under your 2 feet, find the floor. Under your 2 feet, find some planets. Now find the corners of a room of an Inca temple. Now locate the moon. Now locate the 2 corners of the room. Put the feeling of sadness in the 2 corners of the room. Put the feeling of grief in the 2 corners of the room. with the feeling of apathy in the two corners of the room, and grief in the two corners of the room. Find the moon under you and put grief in it. Now put love in it. Now put happiness in it. Find the two corners of the room. Put happiness in the two corners of the room. Okay, now put happiness into your bodies. Happiness into the two corners of the room. Happiness into your bodies. Happiness into the two corners of the room. Happiness into your bodies. Happiness in the two corners of the room. And happiness into your toes. And happiness in the two corners of the room. Happiness into your legs. Happiness into the two corners of the room. Happiness into your stomach. Happiness in the two corners of the room. Happiness into your lungs. Happiness into the two corners of the room. Happiness into your heads. Happiness into the room. Happiness into the Empire State Building. Happiness into your body. Happiness into the mess universe. And happiness into your body. And happiness all around outside the mess universe. And happiness in the mess universe. Happiness outside the mess universe. Happiness into your bodies. Contact the two corners of the room. Put the emotion you think should be there. Open your eyes. Phil. You see how many ways extroversion, introversion, actually, that's all we were doing. All we were doing. This can be run with the phrase, put your attention on, take your attention off, put it elsewhere. It could be run on three universes. You can be a bedpost or be that chair looking at the room. Be an enormous number of things. But it can also be arranged irregularly. Now, just as though it had nothing whatsoever to do, I'm going to tell you how to make chiropractic work. see if you can relate these two dissertations, one to the other. How do we make chiropractic? Well, he stretched the patient out, preferably on the table. He's back up. We find out that the patient has been having pain in some part of his body or another, and we can nearly always find that some area of the spine is pushed aside or crinkled in or tripped up one way or the other. We can always find that case. The extensional nerves, which go down the interior of the spine, go through a great many discs and of course can be cramped. And it's an odd thing, but the nervous system, yeah, there's a dissertation on this in book one, how you would form a nervous system by impacts. At the beginning of one of the chapters of book one. So naturally you find the skull the hardest in the brain, being a shock cushion underneath the skull. All right. The excess shocks and impacts which have gone in and caused the neurons to form up the brain, of course, did not find enough tissue absorption in the brain, possibly, we can hazard. And so not finding enough tissue absorption in the brain were made to extend additional neurons for additional shock absorption. And this was, of course, extended on down the back. If you hit somebody on the feet, it is an interesting thing that he gets the shock in his head. That's quite interesting. Shock in his head is worse than the shock in his feet very often. All right, let's go just a little bit further with this, and we'll find out that somebody is hit in the feet, he is also hit at the base of the spine. When we are running a severe shock or injury, we must not forget if we are doing effort processing or any kind of a process which is trying to move somebody on a time track. And very often, you will just look at this character sitting there, and you'll find out that he just can't move where he is. And there just is no motion. He's in such an apathy about it and so on that you're going to bail him out one way or the other. So you're shifting just per force with anything you use. You're just shifting. He's running. Nothing can happen. He's got such a terrific brace on. Well, you may find he was a little child and he fell out a window and he hit the step or something of the sort. And how do we run? How do we run the pattern of the shock? That's an interesting study. As soon as you start effort processing and start working with effort processing, you start tracing the shock patterns of the body. If you do not know the shock patterns of the body for blows on various parts of the body, your success with effort processing is minimal. But if you've got some sense and you've got a little brain, you're careful to figure out where the brain is and where the brain isn't, and where the shock patterns go, effort processing today is a tremendously workable technique. All right, how do you do this then? You find out that an impact on the feet will travel up to the brain and then go back down the spine. So we're traveling on the most extended and severe shocks which the body has ever received if we are tampering with the spine neurons. If we wanted to treat the minor shocks, we would treat the brain. If we wanted to treat the major trauma and effort, terms of effort, we would treat the spine. Is that so? Follows, doesn't it? Because then the severe shocks to the body have reacted and repercussed into the spine. You will sometimes find a something wrong with the base of the spine on a person. You will be asked about this. You will find something wrong. This person has something wrong with the base of his spine. You know immediately that you find this, that you are dealing with a severe shock which traveled up through the body, went through the brain, went down the spine, couldn't find any more neuron, tried to make some one way or the other, then turned around and re-echoed on itself and traveled up the spine again toward the brain, hit the brain, went down to the original point of injury, turned around at the original point of injury, went up, went into the brain, and went down the spine again, hit the bottom of the spine, couldn't make any more neuron, then turned around and went back up to the brain again. And this is a shock wave that has followed through the body. What does this tell us and what use is it? Well, it developed a whole school of thought, chiropractic, the treatment of the spine. They didn't know why this worked, but it works. All right. You quite often find people have some sort of a cyst at the tail of their spine, that they have something wrong with the sacroiliac. They have something wrong, actually, with the anal area. The anal area belongs to the genitourinary system and actually is better cousin to the respiratory tract than it is the spine. Nevertheless, it can be affected by such shocks. You find people confusing the anal area with the base of the spine in terms of injury. Well, somebody comes to you and they got this trouble in the base of the spine, they have suffered such a severe shock that this sort of a concatenation of shock has taken place, and this is the pattern of injury.
Please note, at this point in the lecture, a gap exists in the original master recording. We now return to the class where the recording resumed.
And continuing this dissertation on the subject of the spine, not really the dissertation on the subject of chiropractic, although I certainly have nothing against chiropractic. I dare say chiropractic has probably done more for man than doctors. I seldom find chiropractors opening their offices up to prefrontal lobotomies and amputations and hystectomies and appendectomies just for the $200. They try to work out of the body displacements of the vertebrae and the discs. Well, this is all very well. Of course, these things do get displaced on a severe shock. And a shock to the spine itself seems to tell the body that it has received a much greater shock in some other portion of the body. You understand? See, I mean, you get an injury to the spine, and this immediately tells the body, boy, there was a terrible injury to the feet. You see how that would be? Because the spine is the extensional shock absorber. When it itself is injured, why, there's a total assumption and connection all the way through the whole system that some other portion's been interested, and the spine is the secondary injury. Whereas you simply kick somebody in the spine. All right, so a shock in the spine does not have to be as great as a shock in the knee in order to produce the equivalent of trauma. Very well. Where does this take us? This takes us into communication, internal and external, and into a type of therapy which, if you ever practice with very little children, dogs, cats, or psychotics, you will find yourself very happy to have this process. Very happy to have it. It is, of course, tactile processing. Tactile processing simply consists of bringing the being into communication with an area which he thinks he must avoid, and showing them that it is safe to inhabit the area. Immediately, I hope some minds jump to the immediate conclusion with regard to theta clarity. Because it's first cousin, right there. All right. The amount of anesthesia which you find in the body is great. The sexual parts have anesthesia. A marked anesthesia compared to the amount of sensitivity which they could have. All you've got to get, as far as sex is concerned, is don't look. And of course it'll come right on down to don't feel. And this is the handy jib-dandy little two-bit technique that they use to pin people down in bodies. What's it got to do with pinning somebody down in a body? Well, you can't look, you can't feel, that means automatically the patient thinks he's avoiding. Now, in most bodies, you will find an enormous zone from the abdomen down to the knees and through the genitals, which is forbidden territory. Mustn't touch. Because, of course, if you can't look, you mustn't touch, or if you can't feel, you mustn't look. It just adds both ways up. It's just a silly identification, Q&A, Q&A, Q&A. And if you have this amount of area in the body which is anesthetized, even to a slight extent, you've got a part of the body which the Thetan can't inhabit, and it's a part of the mess universe which is forbidden to him, and it's right close to home. And if he can't inhabit something that close to home, he sure and can't have it, he knows, Abyssinia. That's a long way away. That's not his country. He feels he might go there and do something about it. But where a thetan has been and where he can no longer go is more important therapeutically than Abyssinian, because he has learned a lesson. He's got some past track on it. He has facsimiles on it. There are deposits of energy which are stacked up. So let's look at sex and find out that in sex we have the area which you can inhabit, which has been inhabited. So therefore the thetan must stay braced against the area. And of course with reverse flows and so forth, as long as he's braced against an area, he doesn't exteriorize. All he's got to do is start bracing against something, you see, and he can't separate himself from it. The trick of the Mesk universe is fight me. If you're interested in buttons, I collect buttons, rotary buttons and other kinds of buttons, but particularly nice push buttons on the subject the mind really reacts to. And the nicest button you ever saw, because it combines have, and have is tremendously important. You have to have a stomach, is about the roughest sort of a button. Somebody has a bad time with his abdomen, you want to bring immediate relief to it, you just get have. Of course, that runs right out, have to have a stomachache. You will end the process prematurely if you merely discharge, he has to have a stomachache. What you will have to run is he has to have a stomach. You see? Because he could only have a stomachache if he couldn't inhabit his stomach. It's quite important. The only therapeutic agent with which we are acquainted is the thetan. All other agents are part-time, sporadic, erratic. And if an infection can set in the body, that's just one infection setting in. Another infection will set in there too. Why? The thetan can't inhabit the area. The initial trouble on the matter and the final cure on the matter is a thetan able to contact that area. If he can contact that area, he can cure that area and there won't be further infection in the area. It's been subjected to tests. All right. Now, all of that data may seem random to you, but if it's not random, not even vaguely random. If he can't inhabit this zone, which is the abdomen, the genitals, and the frontal part of the thighs, he's in a wonderful condition, because that's an area he can't inhabit. Well, if he can't inhabit that area, then he figures he hasn't got any area to inhabit, and you get the identification. If he can't inhabit an area in his own body, then he can't inhabit the area back of his head. That's just part of it, you see. Can't is too strong a word there, because he can always partially inhabit an area. Therefore, he can partially inhabit an area back of his head. So therefore, he get the uncertainty of exteriorization. It gets real uncertain about being out of his head, you see. Because he knows he's a body and he can't be in his own stomach. He doesn't want to be in his own stomach. He's seen a terrible example continuously of what happens to beings which he eats and which go in his stomach. So he's identified with a being, doesn't want to be in his own stomach. So that adds up, and then the sex organs add up, because nobody can look at them, so therefore he mustn't look at them, can't be in them. A thetan can be what he can see. He can see what he can be. That's like a nursery rhyme, but it has fantastic effectiveness in processing. He can be what he can see. He can't be what he can't see. Well, he doesn't like to be only what he can feel, because that's too close up. So as soon as he gets into feel, he starts to get an effect from it. He isn't looking at it. So we knock out in the sexual organs lookingness, and we knock out inhabitingness. And so inhabitingness means there's an area of his body he can't inhabit. Well, if he can't inhabit that area of his body, well, there must be other areas he can't inhabit too. And on Q&A, he would tell you that he doesn't want to be in front of his body. Sounds silly, but he doesn't want to be. There are other reasons. Other people stand in front of his body, and he doesn't want to have it them. There, too many times, ugh, he says to himself, so on. So you never find a thetan willing, really, to walk out in front of his head. He is so unwilling that you find most real roaring psychos are not in the body. They're out in front of their faces, way out. In front of their faces, yards of them. They've blown through All right, let's add this up a little bit further. What's this got to do with an anesthesia? Fine. What's this got to do with chiropractic? Well, he's gotten the idea that he doesn't want to be in places that blow up. One of the reasons why explosion processing is so effective. So he doesn't want to be in this neuron system. And he has an aesthetic. Never overlook the aesthetic factor of processing. Good old AKD. Beauty and ugliness, beautiful sadness, all of this. The cells of the body are what are beautifully sad. Mess is beautifully sad. You find people running beautiful sadness, and boy, they're so darn low on the tone scale that you have to use a parachute to get down to them after you've touched bottom. So, when you start into areas which can't be inhabited, you get areas which one can't be, and you get the first reduction of beingness because it's closest to home on part of the thetan. All right? Another thing, the thetan is continually asking some exterior entity for permission to be. This immediately opens up a process whereby you do a mock-up of the body, and you get other people standing around telling the thetan to be in it, telling the thetan to be out of it, telling it to be above it, telling it to be below it. Next thing you know, bodies and pawns show up. You're not sure, you find out your preclear doesn't have mocked up all of a sudden his body. He's got a body and pawn mocked up, and then they mock up another body and pawn. And bodies and pawns start to go off on doing what? Exteriorizing thing to the left, to the right, in mock-ups. Having other people stand around and tell the thetan to be above and below and around, and telling the thetan to go down and be George Bim, and telling the thetan to go here and go there. The cases which are really lost up and had this happen to them so often that they have the own power to get in and out of the body. They think somebody else has got to come along and say, hey you, be in such and such a place and be such and such a person until we say boo. And when we say boo, you will then return here, and then we'll tell you where else to go. That is what's really nagging your case that you're having difficulty with. He's so used to being told where to go, what to be, what he can be. He's got a license to survive, and he's getting permission to be. But boy, you really have time for yourself. There are various traps in the universe whereby you walk into this place, there's a big glowing stone or some other kind of a trap, and you just walk past the stone and he's out like a light, Pambo. And somebody picks him up and says, what a nice fellow you are. Now, why don't you go down to Earth and get a baby and grow up and be a nice man, and then when you die down there, you just come right back here immediately and this is your reward. I mean, this is all sounds silly to me, but it'll blow off. I sometimes blow up a case with which you're having trouble. Blowing up a case with which you're having trouble is a very, very profitable venture. All right, so you take this person who in front of himself who doesn't exteriorize on step two and doesn't exteriorize then and there readily, you give him mock-up drills of all kinds and descriptions, introversion, extroversion drills, and so on. But you start giving him this drill, people standing around saying, be to the right, be to the left, be above, be below, and get him standing around telling people, be to the right, be to the left. Well, he basically despises the people who first started him downscale on the track, so every time he has theta cleared anybody, he's gotten a little key in on this, until he finally believes that he has to be told explicitly where and what to be, and in a certain state, and in a kind, certain kind of a trance, and so forth. There isn't a person in this room that we could not hypnotize and send over and have with complete certainty them take over the complete entire running of practically any body on this planet. That's a wide open gate for some black lodge to start operating immediately upon Earth, because it's absolutely true. You go down here and find along the curb some little kid. You take this little kid, you hypnotize him, dope him up, so forth. Shoot him over to Russia or England or someplace and pick up some governmental person and start running him. You could do this. This, by the way, many, many eons ago on the track, was the favorite method of political control and remains so today. Now, whether we like this or not, it does indicate to us that there should be a process connected with doing a mock-up of the body and having the thetan be to the right and be to the left and be before and be behind and be above in the mock-up. In brackets. Other people telling about it and so on. As soon as you get this drilled out a little while, then you just go back to step two. And you simply mock the body up, mock the body up, mock the body up. Then you can have mock-ups which demonstrate permission to leave. Military forces dramatize this. A naval officer is never able to leave the ship unless he's got the captain's permission, and so forth and so on. Everybody dramatized this, but particularly the military. And here's an interesting situation with regard to right to leave. Well, all right, what about right to inhabit then? When the society sets down and says, with malice aforethought, that a person does not have the right to inhabit certain portions of his own body, you're starting to get into real trouble, because there's a genus of disease, injury, accident proneness, and also a good, solid proposition about nailing people down in their bodies. You see, it doesn't matter what people say that they use, or what people inform people of, and all this sort of thing. That's beside the point. Language or idea interchange would not be even vaguely effective in this universe unless they were squarely formed by the phenomena of the universe. You process the phenomena, you don't process the statements. You get the reason why. All of this material that you speak and run and so forth has a mechanical base of comparison with this universe. You run the mechanical base and you get someplace, and you run the statements and the phrases and the ideas, you don't get any place, because the idea is at the last moment of crush, we don't process the last moment of crush, just get the person out of the crush area, is the emergency. Either reduce or get the person out of the crush area is the emergency. And the actual one is bringing him up tone scale to a point where he isn't even vaguely worried about crushes. All right, what's this GAN got to do with the spine? You can go up and down the spine and find various spots on the spine which are uninhabitable. They're anesthetized. People seldom realize this, because who looks at the back? Sex be damned. Sex is visible. But backs, a fellow just plain never looks at his back. Most people, when they're having difficulty being stereotyped, when they get out, they take a look at the body is just a black blob. The main part of this is they're looking at the back of the body. And they never look at their own backs. Backs are seldom displayed, and so on. You'll find people here and there through the society have fetishes about backs. And they will adore beautiful backs and so forth. But backs are just, they're so bad off that they're completely forgotten about. One of the reasons for this is because of the residual shock of the biggest injuries which the body has received. The body has received these enormous shocks and injuries, and they've been mirrored in the back. And when there's been a direct spine injury, the body knows it's dead. When the body knows it's dead, it must turn around then. It knows it can't survive as itself. As soon as the body knows it can't survive as itself, it has to turn around and survive as sex. That is to say, it's got to go on down the time track. So what do we get then as the steps of the body which become uninhabitable, and which is the most uninhabitable area of the body? Sex? No. When the body finds out it can't survive, it has been subjected to a sufficient amount of injury that it has registered a severe trauma in the spine, regardless of where the body was hurt. You find anybody who is difficult to exteriorize as having a spinal anesthesia. You go up and down his spine with a pin, with a hammer, and you would immediately discover, and he would be much amazed to find, that there were large skin areas on the spine, just the skin areas, where he can't feel anything. His next area is, of course, sex. Genitals, the area of the abdomen, the front of the thighs, genitalia. But that's second. Well, what do you know? I mean, life isn't all based on sex. After all, Freud wasn't as deep as you could get. As deep as you could get was really the spine. By this logic and by test. You'll find anybody who has a spinal anesthesia has entered the second stage of dependency upon sex. They received an injury to the body. This convinced them that the body was not going to survive forever. Immediately they abandon the idea of surviving forever as the body, and they switch off to surviving by making other bodies. This is the GE specialty. The way the GE operates, and things patterning the GE. All right, its second choice then is the sexual area, and what's its third choice? What happens when sex gets knocked out? you really get the secondary loop of all secondary loops. You get a thetan, you see, who is trying to inhabit the body, and then you get a thetan being a body that's now trying to be a spirit. So immediately that you get into the third echelon, he's got to survive as a spirit religion, that is to say, become immortal by some necromancy and go to heaven by some prestidigitation, and so be able to survive forever, even go to hell, that's at least surviving forever. So you've got a case that has gone through to the third echelon, trying to be a spirit on the third strata. He is a thetan inhabiting a body that is trying to be a spirit. You follow that? So you're trying to exteriorize somebody who is concerned with taking care of his spirit, which is something on the order of his watch. See? And you'll find these people being terrifically removed with regard to their processing. Why are they being so removed with regard to processing? They're processing something else. You've got a preclear in front of you, and there sits the preclear, and you're running the preclear all right, you say, but doggone it, the preclear is already concerned about the body because it can't live forever. And then the body's concerned about sex because sex has failed. Can't have all the babies he wants and so forth, or she wants. And so we find that the spirit has entered in here. We're processing a thetan who is processing a body which is trying to process a spirit. You're never going to exteriorize this boy as long as he's in that kind of a state of mind. Because he's processing something else. Get your order of deterioration and inhabitability. The body can't inhabit itself anymore. It's got to inhabit a spirit. You'll find when he gets way on down the line that he's lost the eighth dynamic, and, pardon me, seventh dynamic, he's gone into the eighth dynamic. He's got to be God, going all over space and so forth. This is the last stages of paranoia. They've got to be God. That's a manifestation of it. And you'll find some of them retreated from the seventh back to the sixth dynamic, and they're trying to be a piece of mist. So there's a fourth and a fifth stage of deterioration. Now you're going to process a psychotic on the subject of thetan clearing and get any place. No, you're not. You're going to have to get him into a body and comfortably inhabiting the body, actually, before you can exteriorize it. Now let me just summarize that in a very, very bluntly. When you're trying to exteriorize a thetan, you're exteriorizing a thetan who is so extremely worried, thrice removed or twice removed in many cases, that he doesn't remove as the thetan. You see, nothing can happen to the thetan. That is the pity of it. That's the horror of it all. That's the horror of the track. Here's the body. The body loves the idea of survival and no pain. It hates the idea of pain. Oh, no. And the thetan, he's very fond of pain. It's sort of interesting. I ran a preclear one time who just fought me with practically fingernails, trying to keep me from convincing her of this. I wasn't trying to convince her of this. I just made the statement, well, I don't know, as a spirit you may enjoy playing, who knows. And she just got madder and hops. So I stopped telling him after that, even vaguely hinting that this might be true, and I just had him waste pain until he suddenly found it out. Well, I wasted pain on this preclear in a bracket, getting this preclear waste pain. They found out the pain was very difficult to waste. Always watch these things that are very difficult to waste. And boy, are they valuable. And it's value that makes scarcity, which makes singleness a possession, which is havingness, which is what pins the person down in the mess. All right, this person finally at last found herself in facsimiles here and there early on the track where she was hanging over this body and watching it writhe, saying, well, I'll have to help the poor thing out, and then just moving into the body very quietly, enjoying all that beautiful pain. The thetan actually can't get any sensation unless he gets some compression. And his anxiety is, how do I get compressed? I was telling somebody a short time ago. First, it didn't seem terribly important to him. I said, "Now, the way to keep a wife is to beat her regular. Don't go in for this idea that that you should never lay hands on a girl." Of course, I got an immediate howl. But I just said it for a gag. All of a sudden, people present began to think of that when things were going well, and there was no quarreling, there was no need for anything, and the wife was getting ignored and wasn't getting anything, very little attention, she left the guy. But at times of terrible stress and poverty, when she was getting thrown downstairs and hit with a clothes bucket every now and then, and so forth, you thought just beautifully messed up, no thought of breaking that family up. No, sir. Fantastic. You'll find out that families blow to pieces in the moments of calm, not in the moments of stress. Well, same way with a husband. You'll see some husbands going around and married to some gal. My God, she throws books at him, stamps, and beats her feet, and once in a while hit him with a poker, and screams and roars and so forth. And the family doesn't break up. You might find him doing other things than being completely maritally loyal, but doesn't leave the girl. Oh, he says he does. But everything's going along beautifully and so forth, and she's working hard to send him through medical school or something of the sort. Everything is going along, and she's being the best girl you ever heard of. And the next thing you know, what do you know? Why, bam! He's off with some other dame. Overtly and gone. Now, life makes sense on SOP8L when you run it. Something you should learn for yourself. But it's violence, pain, distress, problems, that sort of thing is the breath of life to the faith. But he really got himself in wonderful situations where there's lots of agony and emotion and beautiful sadness and dramatization and galore. He's just happy as can be. He's just gorgeous. That's wonderful. He can just gorge on that stuff. Okay. Now, that's great. But when everything is calm and peaceful and so forth, and he has the orange grove, which he's retired to, and the kids are all doing well, and everybody's doing well, he's liable to go out and blow his brains out. Life makes sense when you realize that work and pain are intensely desirable. Intensely desirable to this state of existence. And calmness, peace, and long-term survival, they're not desirable. We'll go over that an awful lot when we get into SOP8L. We're not in there yet. But keep in mind that life does make sense. It does make sense. It's just trying madly not to, because if it permits itself to make sense, there's no randomity. Life's effort is not to make sense. Life makes beautiful sense. Look over squarely, so forth. They're willing to be sufficiently detached from it. All right. Let's look then at this business of the geographical. You know, the sun and the moon have geographical areas of navigation. Yeah, they do. They have geographical areas. They're known as the GP, the geographical position on Earth of the sun at a certain hour, and the geographical position of the moon. It means if Earth is blown up to a sphere as big as the heavens. There's that particular orbit, but the latitude and longitude of the body on that theoretical sphere would be such and so and so and so. So we can say anything has a geographical position. The only point I'm trying to make here. The body, although it can move around, is still a position in mass. Don't forget that one, by the way. That's liable to trip you someday. You're liable to start running out all the geographical positions to which this boy is allergic, and suddenly find out the geographical position to which he's allergic is him. He's mobile, and he's been carrying this geographical position all over the place. This horrible thing called the mobile geographical position, and that's what louses life up. If he only had GP, this is precise as the sun and moon. The sun and moon move, and there's still geographical positions. All right. Where do you start in, then? If you were going to assess somebody brutally and cruelly and wickedly, just pull their problems to pieces at a heck of a rate, how could you positively and completely assess a being by never asking him a question? Never put him on an E-meter. E-meter's secondary. Boy, that's easy as can be. You would look for these first two signs. Anesthesia of the back spine area. How great and how marked. Anesthesia of the genitalia. How great and how marked. And if you had both of these, you would look for the deterioration of the endocrine system and signs in the person that the thing was trying to kill the body. Physical signs, and these show up in very marked and precise ways. We need to go into that particular. The thing is trying to eat the body up or kill it so that it can survive as a spirit. Isn't that cute? Now you'll find many a preacher will just sit and chew and chew and chew and chew, and he says he's chewing on engrams. He's not. He's actually trying to knock the body off. Eat it up. Chew it up. One way or the other. What he's doing the very best thing he can. It is anesthetized. It can't feel anymore. So what are the first three positions? The first three big, marked, radical positions. The encroachment of succumbing and the difficulty of the case is marked in these stages. One, anesthesia of the spine. Two, anesthesia of the genitalia. Right in with that comes, by the way, stomach difficulty, digestion difficulty, and so forth. But it's anesthesia with one. And the next is anesthesia of the body itself as a whole, including its sense, organs such as particularly taste and smell. Those are the first two sense perceptions to go. Okay? So, you look at this person and they're terribly thin, very thin. Or they're this way, or they're that way. If you were to give them an examination, if you were to stretch them out on a table and look over their spine, if they were very thin and looked in bad shape, you would be wasting your time to do that. You would just know that you ought to do this just for your own satisfaction. You look over their spine, and it's these. If you were to take the abdomen, need to go into the genitalia, or the front plate of the thigh, you would find a marked anesthesia. Uh-huh. Then they will worry about pain, and they will accident prone and try to get pain. But you'll find out the remainder of the body is anesthetized, and then from the anesthesia you go into the perception deterioration, and the perception deterioration starts with taste and smell. Anesthesia actually starts out with feelingness, which is immediately allied to lookingness. And you can measure directly the body's ability to look by measuring the deterioration of its ability to feel. Now he has been able to feel, and now he can't feel, which tells you what? It tells you he has degressed from looking to feeling, and that was all right. Then he regressed from feeling to not feeling. That was all right. About the time he gets into not feeling, he's into thinking. And when he's into thinking real deep and so forth, well, that's pretty bad. But he goes on from there. Doesn't mean he necessarily deteriorates his whole sight in one lifetime, by the way. He's busy agreeing with what Mest ought to do. Somebody tells him to get out of the body, or tells him he's got to come back here. And they, all these boys are worried about trying to get their anchor points back. And somebody's trying to get them back. And so on. And you can get your anchor points just back so far, you just can't feel a thing, believe me. You start pulling in hard enough, feel nothing. Theoretically now, you could barely put your hand out, and by tightening up its muscles and withdraw action, you could bring about a state of anesthesia by pulling in the anchor points which make up the muscles. Just try to get a withdrawing action, very, very solid, and test the amount of pain, relative pain, in the hand. Now, what you would get in a case like this is the person does this instinctively when he hits his finger, for instance. He immediately pulls the finger into him and tenses and tries to compress and tighten, bring into him again, all of the muscle anchor points. This is to shut off feeling. And recoiling from things shuts off looking and then shuts off feeling. The real deepest horror there is to get them back so far that one cannot look, and he dare not feel, and the summation of horror is simply must not withdraw, must not reach, must not grasp or let go. You can just run that concept on a person, horror turns out. All right, the anatomy then has a great deal to do, physical anatomy has a great deal to do with a person's ability to exteriorize. What is a very reliable technique? Oh, this is a very reliable technique. Exteriorization, interiorization. That kind of shifts a person's viewpoint around. Coupled with, on a very difficult case, the patch up and repair of each one of these steps in terms of geographical location. You see, there'd be nothing to this. You want to get this person to put out anchor points. This will rehabilitate his feeling. But of any technique, it's extroversion, introversion, recovers communication. Recovers communication in the interior, recovers communication in the exterior, and so we go right along with it. There's nothing to it. Now, is there an artificial method by which we can do this? Well, not very well. But if there is one, it would go in this fashion. Very simple one, very quiet one, very careful. You would give an irregular, alternately painful, pleasant, and again irregular sensation in any part of the body which you desire the thing to reach. Don't give a monotonous. Don't go on the body. Tap, 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 tap. No, no, no. If you're tapping any part of the body, give the thing to reach it, you go. Surprising, because after you've gone this way a short time, it's a steady attention, repetitive cycle of action, which is no motion or no randomity, and so he doesn't give it any attention. No randomity is the background. This repetitive action is the beginning of automaticity. He simply sets up a circuit to look at it. It's going that way now. He doesn't look at it again until it goes suddenly. Now, you haven't paid any attention to your heart for a long time, but if your heart all of a sudden went, you pay attention to it for a long time. Well, you could take a person exteriorly on the subject of skin, and by using a small, light, very gentle brush, a bristle brush, pins, a wood file, an emery wheel, and such bric-a-brac produce different types of sensation with which the thing can communicate, right? All right, next thing you would do would be to produce sensation in the area irregularly. You know, you put the file across it, zip, you get the zip, and zip, 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 zip.
Zip.
You'd have his attention. You want to heal up somebody's broken leg in a fair hurry, all you'd have to do is take an extremity beyond the point of the break and start to operate all around it, changing your location and changing the intensity and vibration and characteristic of touch on that area. It tells you how to do chiropractic. It's only when the vertebrae would go completely out that an injury to that level that chiropractic is interested in. But let us not be quite as fascinated with that. The only reason the vertebrae is out is being held out by tension. You'd really be working it slightly wrong way too, to give it just an adjustment, that is, just a shove on it or something or something. Actually, if you could take the tension of it off one way or the other, well, you'd have a better situation. But where it's out severely and so forth, you could push it out by an injury. Sure, you could change its sensation. And when you change its sensation, you attract the person's attention to it, and you get the only therapeutic address it can have applied to it by the change of attention. When there's something very mechanically wrong with the vertebrae, it's practically an operation to get it really back in shape again. Where chiropractic accomplishes this, and very often snaps the spine slightly out of line or dislocated back into one, and you get an improvement in the condition. Well, you've given a little counter shock to the area. You've done various things on the area. But let's not just hit or miss on this area, how many various things can do. If the vertebrae was really out of line because of an injury, you'd get to be put back into line by a chiropractor, by a medical doctor, by something or other. You'd adjust it mechanically. I'm not advocating adjusting it mechanically, by the way. Or you'd simply better plow into it on a business of restoration of feeling and looking in there. How simple. So you just take this spine and you, with taps and clips and hits and little zips and things like that, and various traction of sensation to the area, the person theoretically could just be made to bring his attention down into the area and just blow out whatever's wrong with it. You see that? You take an injured part, sprained wrist, sprained ankle on a little baby, or a hurt horse, or a hurt dog. The only therapy you really got that's really good therapy is just that one. Mechanical erratic sensation in the area so as to bring about a communication on the part of the being running this mock-up to that area, and so a reduction of the tension and shock in the area, which actually is a blow-up of the trauma in the area. The only process you've got. The small children and so on is immediately workable, and it's workable on people out of communication, as in the state of a catatonic. The catatonic, of course, is so low on communication that they are in terrible condition. Now, if you were to put a catatonic in a vibrating drum of some sort or another, which would attract attention alternately and irregularly to their body, they very possibly would come out. See, there's no permanent injury to the thing, ever. He can always be persuaded to do something. Very well, how do we tie up then all these things I've been talking about? Exteriorization, interiorization. Well, if a person doesn't communicate well interiorly, don't expect him to communicate well exteriorly. If he can't handle the first object of the first dynamic, he won't be able to handle the sixth object of the sixth dynamic, which is the best universe. If he can't handle that body, which is right in front of him, and he's badly stuck in it, his problems will be so great in trying to control the body that you aren't going to get it to relax his attention for a moment and try to control the best universe. People who can't move things, for instance, are still too wrapped up in trying to control minor things such as the body. Right? Their attention is so fixed upon the body that they cannot unfix their attention to anything else. They're fixated in on this operation of control. The more fixated they are, the harder they are trying to control. Control is the effort to control, and the feeling that one must control has its inception with this grave cannot inhabit. If I can't pervade, I have to control. So if a fellow can't pervade one, that's fine. He's doing all right in a place else. He can kind of follow shape right there. He had a little trouble exteriorizing. If he can't pervade his spine or the area of sexual anesthesia I mentioned, he's going to have a little more trouble. And boy, if there's no feeling in that body at all, he can't pervade any part of that body. Actually, it's practically dead. Boy, you're going to have a hell of a time dragging him out doing something. Of course, there's the last one of no actual life or feeling in the body. And when it gets down to that level, boy, oh boy, oh boy, all he does is feel very sad about the whole thing. Leave. He's not stuck to the body. He just won't give up until he's finished the cycle of action and pervasion. What is the thing trying to do? He's trying to pervade. And that is beingness, and that is havingness. The ultimate in havingness is being able to pervade something. So he really wants a body, he's having to pervade it. So you've got to give him the body, let him pervade it. When you're having trouble with a case, whatever system we're using, please understand what's the matter with the case. He can't pervade it. So you can teach him to approximate it. And then, after you've taught him to approximate it, which is build the mock-ups of it, and so on, your next stage is a very simple one. It's teaching him to communicate with it. And you do that by teaching him to communicate with it, and then with his exterior environment, and then with it, and his exterior environment. You do so selectively, somewhat on the order of the process I was giving you at the beginning of the session. There are many such processes. There's even the process, you go over a person very carefully, like this. You say, all right, now let's feel this foot and let's feel that foot and let's feel this shin and that shin, the stomach, and so forth. And you're not trying to force him to feel any of these parts. All you want to know is what part he's having difficulty feeling. You can do this sometimes in mock-ups. You throw a mock-up up there and large sections of it are gone. Those are the areas he can't have it. See, and sometimes you'll throw up a mock-up in the area of the sexual sensation and so forth is missing, or black. Areas which can't be inhabited are normally areas which are black. All right, so you'd go over a body and you'd do a careful assessment of the body on the terms of where can't this fellow be in his body. And you don't try to exteriorize the thing. This is something like backing the cart up very prematurely. No, let's, for God's sakes, before we back the car up, find out if we got a horse. And in this particular case, let's see if we can inhabit the body before we try to get the thing to inhabit the space surrounding the body. If he can't inhabit the space surrounding the body, you know that he's having difficulty in inhabiting the body. It's up to you, then, to find how far this difficulty goes. He may be having trouble inhabiting the body and inhabiting the body's past in terms of the geographical location where the body's been. There are other ramifications on this, but actually your first task in a difficult case, or in a case which isn't doing as well as it should, or in any case, actually, is to try to get him to inhabit and pervade what he is trying to pervade. Anytime you can assist the thing to do what he is trying to do, you get well people, all of this. That's the end of the lecture.